You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to my couch. Nice to have you today. And this is a great topic we're going to be sharing with you. You're going to love my guest. You're going to love her book. You're going to just don't go anywhere because you're going to learn a lot about yourself. Maybe your family, maybe your siblings. So first of all, what I'm going to do is ask you some questions. And then you're going to go, yeah, maybe that's me. I don't know. So have you been feeling anxiety about too many things for too long? Yes. Do you experience self-doubt? Do you have that imposter syndrome thing going on? Yeah, a lot of us do. I mean, we all pretty much, you know, do. But do you bottle your emotions up? Would you like to say things? But you go, you can't do that. Well, you'll find out why you do these things and more. You're going to with my guest, the insightful, most helpful therapist, LCSW and author, Maggie Nick. And we're talking about her book, and we're going to share that with you in just a bit. Maggie's going to explain why parents with unresolved issues and even seemingly good parents, right? All the people I deal with go, but I'm a good parent. Well, sometimes they don't realize how they affect their kids and they carry these feelings into adulthood. Yeah. And how to break those generational cycles if you're a parent. And I don't like the word toxic, but, you know, come on, it is kind of toxic sometimes. How you can also, as an adult, cultivate some self-compassion, emotional safety, authentic connection, and lower that anxiety within yourself. So let's bring her on right now. Maggie Nick. Hi, girl.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh no, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you also for your book. What a great book.
Thank you.
Let me share, folks. It's called Good Kids, Why You Suffered in Silence and How to Break the Cycle. Yeah. Are you psychic? Did you know my story with you?
I get called a witch a lot, actually, when I do these videos on Good Kids. People are like, are you a witch? How did you just explain my whole life?
At least it's not the B word, right?
We'll take it.
But no, I mean, it's just amazing that so many people, and I know you in your practice, work with so many people who say, why am I so anxious? Why am I so this and all that? So we're going to talk about, you know, sort of breaking those toxic cycles. I want your backstory. So many people want to know how to take care of themselves, especially as adults. But let me just share with the folks a little bit more about you.
Okay.
You're a licensed clinical social worker, a specialist in trauma therapy. You're also a parenting expert and a recovering good kid. Yeah, Good Kids Anonymous, girl. That's it. Right here. And along with your therapy practice, you're the founder of Camp Lovable. That is so amazing. And the Good Girl Rehab Center. You received your master's in social work from Indiana University and your bachelor's in sociology, double majoring in psychology from Virginia Tech.
I did.
And, you know, I agree with how others describe your work because I loved your book as a fierce mix of hope and hard truths, guiding us back to ourselves. And the book again, Good Kids, Why You Suffered in Silence and How to Break the Cycle. Wow. What a wonderful book. I'm just so happy that you're here.
Oh my gosh. What an intro, man.
Well, that's you. That's all you, girl.
I appreciate it.
I just went online and found out more.
Well, thank
and that's
you.
A lot. But just jumping right in, what was it? And I know you say you're a recovering good kid. What was it that inspired you, though, to write this book for everybody?
I was not just a good kid. I was a raging good kid. Ooh. Really. Like very debilitated. Not everybody is as debilitated as I was, right? There's a spectrum here. I had a great childhood. Let's start there, right? I mean, came out of childhood like, we had a great time. Had a problematic relationship with my mother, but trying to work through that. Eventually ended up in therapy to try to work things out with her. And I had noticed the two ways that my good kid patterns broke through to a place where I was like, I need help, is how viciously critical I was of myself. I've had two therapists tell me that I am the most viciously critical client they've ever treated.
Oh dear. Oh no.
So I'm not anymore, really. Like the biggest, out of focus, but I really was so viciously. But on the outside, like sunshine, sparkles and rainbows and the kindest, most positive, gentle, wonderful person. Like, but inside, just vicious, I mean, punishing, just like so mean to myself. And I had a really hard relationship with food. I had to sue food, binge eating disorder. And so that was kind of the place that I'm like, okay. And so I got into therapy at 25 finally and healed my way through my actual childhood trauma, the couple things that had happened. Thank you. And really thought it would change things. And it didn't really. Like, I'm like, well, if it wasn't that, what the heck was it? And as I kept working through it, all roads kept leading back to this peripheral, crushing belief that there was something wrong with me. That was kind of the, like, every road, the people pleasing, as we identified, the people pleasing. I'm like, oh, it's because I'm afraid people will find out.
Right.
What if they leave me? And because it's like, why would they leave you? And it's like, because there's something wrong with me. It's like the perfectionism, the people pleasing, the overachieving, the needing to just like be impressive all the time and feeling like a version of me that isn't impressive is like unlovable or hard to love. Like it's really, you kind of grow up with extreme beliefs. Like, but like just resting for a minute feels like, well, what if people, what will they think about me? You know, like you just, goes to anxiety really fast. So as I started trying to pull on this thread, I kind of, that was right about the time I was blessed to find Dr. Brené Brown and her work on shame.
Yes, she's awesome.
And that just stopped me in my tracks. It's like, oh my gosh, this is the thing I keep bumping up against. I think this is shame. And believing that something is fundamentally wrong with you is shame. That is exactly what that is. And so really never imagined any of this. I knew I, you know, I wanted to be a therapist and I was in grad school to be a therapist, but never imagined any of this. I was just so worried about messing up my kids, honestly. I became an accidental expert in parenting and trauma and relational shame, which is what this is. Really just to try to not mess up my kids. I was so worried I would mess them up and just that I wouldn't know how to do it. You know, I just had this like really deep knowing that like I have a lot of healing to do before I can be the mom that they deserve, the mom that I needed, the mom, you know. And so then when I came out of grad school and started my practice, it was wild. I did attract a lot of people who were good kids. I think based on how I wrote my Psychology Today profile on my website, you know, talking about perfectionism and people pleasing and feeling not good enough. And so I had this whole practice of good kids. I had a lot of like the bad kids too, though. That was an interesting, like, just to contrast them. But when I started having these moments where I would, it would feel like I was sitting with the same person in two points in time. Like I would sit with an adult in the morning and then I would have a child that afternoon and it would feel like this was the child version of that client. Like I started having these moments where they would say the same things. And I was kind of like, whoa, that's weird. And like, then I would take an insight from this client into, and they'd be like, how did you know I needed to hear that? I'm like, oh, just a hunch, you know.
That was me, baby.
That too. But I really did start to see these patterns. I'm like, wait a second, there is like a specific predictable outcome here. Like we can track across a lifetime. And then one day I was driving home from the store and it was like hit with this lightning bolt of like, stop the car. We need to make a video. And I was on Instagram at that point, but not, had never said the words good kid out loud, but I did. I said the price I paid to be the good kid. And I talked about my perfectionism, my people pleasing, my need for control, how I was burned out, overachieving, and how good kids suffer in silence, really. And that was my first viral video. Like it went super viral and tens of thousands of people flooded the comments. Like, are you a witch? How do you know me? How did you just describe my entire life? Like, who are you? What have you done? And that was my like, oh, this is a thing. This is a global thing.
Good for you. No, it's amazing. It's a wonderful story. And also, do you find that many of the, and I know you mentioned this in your book, but many of the folks also, they kind of have experienced as they move into adulthood as well, somatic issues, you know, they got aches or they have issues. What are some of the things you're seeing with, because I'm hearing this from young adults I work with and, you know, middle-aged folks and whatever, their bodies.
I'm so glad you asked. So in the book, part one is how do good kids happen? What is this and how does this happen?
Yep.
It's parenting. It's not our fault. It's generational stuff that's been passed down, but we can break the cycle. Part two is how to heal. And then part three is parenting. And in part three, it's always parenting and reparenting though, right? Like everything my kid needs, I got to go back to little me and give her that.
Oh boy, is that huge.
Right? That's huge. So in part three, what I really tried to do is give parents a handbook, because I have so many parents who around the world, but then also in my practice, who are like, help. Like I know it's, I can see it happening with them and I feel so helpless and I don't know how to help them. Like I think I'm doing it, but I don't know how to not do it. So I like to conceptualize it in my own practice as check engine lights.
Nice.
Not red flags, check engine light.
That's right.
Because if we're driving and your check engine light comes on, if we could figure out a way to get that light to turn off, there would still be a problem.
Right.
Right. So the perfectionism is not the problem. It's the check engine light for a deeper problem.
Oof.
And so I really, for like months, I paid really close attention to the things I was noticing and tried to come up with my best top 10 list. So I go through 10 check engine lights in the book for good kids.
Wow. Yes.
And I talk through what it looks like on the surface, what the deeper struggles are. It's always shame, by the way. And then what your child needs to hear from you, like how to help them.
Yeah.
And so it's perfectionism and a debilitating fear of failure. It's things like overachieving to the point where you can't even, you know, enjoy your wins because you're already picking apart what you should have done better. Right.
Right.
I do talk about psychosomatic symptoms. And if we're seeing headaches and tummy aches and things like that, we do kind of need to lean in. Like maybe this child looks okay on the outside, but they're working really hard to hold it together on the inside. And that's going to show on the outside, right? The body's going to at some point buckle under the pressure of holding all of that. Yeah. So I do talk through that. And I really did want to give parents like, here, like go read the check engine lights. And like, really it applies to us from a reparenting standpoint.
Sure.
Like, I've had a lot of clients read it just to help themselves understand better how this looked in childhood. And then there's also a reparenting section for each of those for like going back for little you.
That's such a wonderful part of that book as well. Yeah. Thanks. So thanks for answering that. No, it's true. Yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, besides somatic issues that come up, also there's some paranoid stuff. What if they think of me? You know, we're hypervigilant. You know, it's like, oh my God, did I, was it in the, you know, the rumination about how did I come off? And we're reliving. I have so many people reliving that conversation they had with their, whatever the interview was. Sure, that's normal. Or with someone at work or someone, you know, their partner, their friends. It's like, ooh, did I come off this? And they're rechecking. But it's like, let it go.
It's exhausting.
Right.
Well, I mean, but I think it comes from one of my gifts is being able to take something and like be able to zoom, draw a straight line to where that comes from. And for that one actually makes so much sense. Like, think about, and this is the just the way that we've parented generation after generation, right? Like these beliefs about children that really don't makes sense at this point with what we understand about children. It's not actually realistic to expect a child to never misbehave. That's insane.
Oh yeah. Right.
That's
exactly.
Absolutely insane. That's like expecting a dog to never bark. Like how, how do you expect that? Like we can technically grind that out of the child. And I think a lot of parents believe that's our job is to just roll up our sleeves and I don't enjoy this any more than you do, but my job to be a good parent, I've just got to punish disrespect and misbehavior out of you until you stop pushing back. And now I'm a good parent and you're a good kid. And we won.
That's right.
We did it. Right. And that's like the way the child is from a behavioral standpoint is a very poor indicator of how they're doing inside. Right.
Wow. That's so right. Exactly.
Yeah. And so, so often, thank you.
No, it's true.
So often these kids are just really, they're bottling all of their feelings.
Yeah.
And I think, so jumping back, I got off track. Yeah. Let's come back. Yeah. So there is this generational thing where if you think about it, we needed our parents to be checking on us. How is she doing?
Yeah.
Is she anxious? Is she scared? But they weren't doing that. We were watching them.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Are they happy with me? Are they okay? Yep. Are they mad at me? Oh God, they're disappointed in me. They're cold. Yeah, look they're at the pulling face. Away.
Body well, language. Look at the, you know, yeah. unspoken weirdness.
It's right. Like- and like how many of our parents went cold to like, I mean, my mother used to brag that I needed to jerk your chain and get your attention with Oy. The silent treatment. Like it was not only like, not only do I not yeah. owe you an apology, you yeah. owe me an apology.
Right.
Because you were out of control. So it's like,
oh my gosh, it's like that guilt.
The way that we, right. And the way that we live our lives, assuming it's our fault, assuming we're in trouble,
right.
bracing, scanning, monitoring for people, listening for indicators mm-hmm. that they're mad. Like that is how we survived childhood.
Yes. Yes.
Right. So and then true. We become parents and we are attuned to our children.
Sure.
And then there's this weird grief because you're like, well, when is anybody going to check in with me? Who's watching
exactly.
me?
You know? Exactly. No, it's yeah. it, and it's, you know, it is. It's kind of an intergenerational thing. And mm-hmm. you by no means or anyone else means to be a bad parent. And in this day and age, you know, it's we get triggers all over. We're stressed. We're bassing along sometimes. And you don't even have to be bad parents. And mm-hmm. by the way, in case you just joined us, folks, I'm talking with therapist LCSW, Maggie Nick. She's the author the book we're talking about, sorry, I have allergies like galore up here. Good Kids, Why You Suffered in Silence and How to Break the Cycle, folks. So, I mean, it's an amazing book. MaggieNick.com, check her out. She's amazing. Look at all of her posts. Look at all of her, everything she does. Her social media is brilliant. You can get the book as well. We'll tell you how you can do that. Go on her website, go to Amazon. Okay. Anyway, here's the thing. How do good parents raise? I mean, good, good. They're good people. Mm-hmm. How do they raise traumatized good kids? We can, and you know, talk about some of those things, but it's like my sister and I joke about like my dad. He really was a soft-spoken, gentle giant, but he had the look. And mom would go, I'm going to tell your dad if you don't. And he'd come in and he'd give the look. We call it the look. And we go, and then, but he never touched us. They never harmed us. They were not really emotionally abusive people. It was pretty salt of the earth, but that's all they knew. Mm-hmm. That's all they knew. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, so let me start. I feel like grounding it in a relatable experience is often a good place. So when we are like, why do I say, are you mad at me all the time? Yeah. Right. As soon as someone seems off, why am I jumping to that?
Yeah.
It's because we have never experienced someone being angry with me and angry with us and still making us feel like they loved us.
Yes.
Like if I had to zero in on one thing, it's that.
Right.
Right. Boy. That when our parents like were upset with us, when we misbehaved, they acted like, oh, I've seen who you really are. This is who you really are. And like, I better never see this side of you again.
Right.
Right.
Wow. Yes.
Right. And so kids don't just experience that as like, oh, I shouldn't do that again. Kids are like, oh, got it. That version of me that is lazy, forgetful, makes mistakes, too loud, too much, annoying. That version of me is not acceptable. Got it. There's something wrong with that version of me. And then we go through life with this like, oh my God, I can't let anybody find out that I have these sides of me that are actually hard to love, unlovable. Oh, and we go through life trying to be the shape-shifting chameleon, right? Into whatever will be the most lovable version of ourselves for the person in front of us.
Right, right. But deep down in our hearts too, I mean, in a lot of folks who I talk to, they say, you know, I have anxiety. I do all those things, but that's part of kind of who I am. I mean, the parent took my identity and told me that I had to be a good kid. And that when I was good, they go, oh, you're being such a nice young lady or a nice young man. You know, but it's like, yeah, that is part of me, which is, it's a good thing to be observant of others, aware of others, conscious of how we speak, because there's so many, you know, everything the post is about narcissistic personalities. Everybody's, you know, had a contact with a narcissist. That's different. We're talking different here. right?
Yeah.
We're talking people who are almost the opposite.
Oh, afraid to breathe too loud because people will leave them. I mean, literally. Yes. Like, that's not an exaggeration. Yeah, I mean, I think we tend to see a child who never misbehaves as like the ultimate goal. And that's really where I'm like, red flags, everybody, alarm bells. Like, please hear me when I say that good kid, the one that you call a delight to have in class, the one who's so mature and so responsible and the one who barely even needs to be disciplined. Like, they're so disciplined. Right. It's like they're parenting themselves and nobody even has to worry. Like, red flags, everybody. Like, that is the child I'm actually most worried about as a therapist.
Right.
We lose some of these people. That shame eats them alive and we lose them. Like, the stakes are not low here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if we don't lose them, they spend their lives, like you said, hypervigilant, bracing, feeling like they're never enough. Yeah. Right. Trying to prove to everybody, look, okay, I'm good. I'm good inside. I have these sides of me that are bad, but don't worry. I'm going to show you how good I am with how much I can carry and how impressive a load I'm carrying and how well I do everything. And look, I never make mistakes, but at what cost?
Right. And many times they're the ones that are always there for everybody else and their friends. They're the ones that are listening and empathizing and, oh my gosh. And they're kind of the family and friend therapist.
They are. That's exactly right. Yeah. They need support too. And again, our parents didn't do this on purpose. They had no idea. Right. Had no idea. And I do think there was a shift kind of in the 80s and 90s where we were trying to move away from physical punishment, which is a good thing.
Absolutely.
You just kind of replace one poison with another poison because shame is a different kind of poison, right? Physical punishment is one kind of poison. Right. Shame works, air quotes works. It does work. It eradicates the behavior. But if we are destroying someone's self-worth in the process, we got to ask ourselves, is there a different way? Is there a different way to raise kind, respectful kids who consider others but aren't selfless, right? Who can actually have a human moment? And there is. Like, and it's really just, I want you to imagine for a minute. Remember when we would mess up and our parents would go cold, right? We could tell they were let them down.
The silent treatment, right? The silent treatment.
Right. Yeah. And so many parents or so many clients have said, when my parent, they can tell me every single time a parent said, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. They can go right back to that mode. They can be like, the first time I was seven, like they remember it. It is seared into our memories, like a core memory in a bad way.
Right.
Like, tell me that's healthy when all these clients who don't remember their childhood can tell me the exact times. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes them believe that they're a disappointment. Anyway, it makes it about them. But let's just imagine that moment. And I want you to imagine our parent had come around and instead of saying, what is wrong with you? You should be ashamed of yourself. I'm not mad. I'm disappointed. The one that cuts me so deep, that's even hard to say. I expected more from you.
Oh, I know.
Sorry, everybody. But like, let's just imagine instead of that, you had gotten, hey, you made a mistake. You messed up.
Yeah.
I know who you really are.
Love it.
And I know that this isn't you.
Yes.
Right? So there will be consequences for your actions.
Yes.
And you will have to show up for the impact. You'll have to make this right. But you and I are good. We're good.
I
love you. I'm here for you. And we'll face these consequences together. Like, do you feel it in your body, how different that feels?
Oh God. Yes. Yeah.
We got to stop like punishing them with the relationship, right?
Right.
Like, our parents basically were like, you have my love. No, you don't. You messed up. There are these misguided beliefs again, that have been handed down that children need and deserve to suffer when they mess
That's
up
right.
alone.
Right.
And
right.
so I think our parents and our parents' parents all the way up thought that we have to make it hurt so bad that they will never do that again. But shame doesn't do that. Shame says you are worthless.
That's right.
You are terrible. Right. Shame makes it about them. Shame sits at the level of our identity. So they don't hear I disappointed them. They hear I am a disappointment.
Right.
Deep down. I'm a disappointment. Right. So I better make sure nobody else finds out that I, deep down, am a disappointment.
Yes, Maggie. And you are right on. Yeah. I have a couple of patients who actually say, who've actually been told, if you don't act like this, or if you don't straighten up or do this, I won't love you as much. What? Mm-hmm. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's, and the thing is the parents just know what they learned and they're stressed. Sure. I'm making excuses. Okay. They're stressed. They're both working. They've got, oh, we'll talk about the siblings too. That's another interesting thing too.
Yes, because my
sister, I have a great sister, by the way. She's awesome. We're BFs right now. Okay. She's a little older, just the opposite. Just totally the opposite. Her soul, her personality. When my mom told her, shamed her, she'd just cross her arms and go, no, and walk away. Okay, you're grounded. Fine.
That is a nervous system thing. Oh, that's what emerging research is finding. Right? That her nervous system and kids like that, that have the audacity to keep pushing back.
Yes.
It's just that they're wired for a fight flight. Where yes. the kids. Right. We were always going to be naturally more compliant. Like our temperament was less oppositional. Right. But we were also like the pressure to be good doesn't land the same for every child. Like some of us were just born naturally more sensitive, more attuned to our parents and what made them happy and what made them mad. Right. Yeah. And wanted I think felt the temperature of the room in a different way. We just were more aware of things. And that's just how we were always going to be. So we were also wired for a fawn freeze response. Like our nervous system had a fight response, but instead of going out at our parent and fighting back, it went in and we were, that's that vicious punishing voice is that it is a fight response that's trapped because all the energy has to go somewhere. And so instead of getting mad at them, we're like, what did you do? You're so terrible. Right. And we fight ourselves.
Exactly. We do. That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
And then the other sibling who has the soul, that's a little more, let's just say assertive, mm-hmm. you know, just they're the ones that are sneaking out with two pair of clothes for high school.
Right. Well, and like the wonderful thing.
Wear the short skirt.
Right.
Change in the bathroom and then rock it at school like that. Right. Put the high heels back in the bag. And it's like.
I could not have pulled that off if my life were dependent on it as a good kid. There's no way. That's it. It would have been the most stressful thing I've ever been through if I tried to pull it off. Right? I would have felt so guilty, so bad, so anxious. It wouldn't have even been fun.
Right.
That's a good kid. Yeah. No, really but I do, the great news here, this really is ultimately a message of hope, I hope. I want everybody who reads it to be like, oh my gosh, is there nothing wrong with me? I think there's nothing wrong with me. I think that's every page of this book is telling me there's nothing wrong with me. Please, there isn't. Yes. There things have happened to you, but that doesn't mean deep down there's something wrong with you. But the other thing is we can heal so profoundly.
Right, we can.
I love myself so hard now. Like I went from the most viciously critical client to two therapists to like, you would be kind of grossed out at how like loving and kind and compassionate and patient and sweet I am with myself. Like all day, every day. Like I treat myself so well now. I really has been like a 180. And we can take that great response that's inward and we can turn it out.
Yes. Yes.
Like we don't have to live like this forever. Right. So when someone crosses me, instead of being like, oh my God, they're going to be mad. I'm like, wait a second. I don't deserve that. I don't have to fight
them.
Maybe. Doing something about it. Instead of being frozen and scared, I'm like, wait a second. Considering myself being like, I don't deserve that. That's weird. That's not okay. And like standing up for myself, even if it's just me with me, there's so much healing.
Yeah, so much healing. I'm so good for you. And that's why you can give it because, you know, it's God, you know, and this is really trite. We always say this, right? If you don't love yourself first, you're not going to be able to find healthy love out there. And or you're not going to be able to give it as much because you have to forgive yourself. You have to love you have to go, oh, you poor. And we'll get into reparenting in just a little bit because I love that therapy. That's so awesome. You talk about that. But in case you just joined us, guys, I'm with the wonderful Maggie Nick. She's a LCSW therapist, specializes in trauma, helping people with relationships. And just an amazing, she has so much to tell you in her book. Ooh, Good Kids, Why You Suffered in Silence and How to Break the Cycle. come on, let's break this cycle and let's and get do some work, you know, within yourself and forgive yourself and love yourself. And so many people say to me, it's like, I can't love myself. I don't love you. That's weird. I don't want to be a narcissist. And it's like, well, no, you're not. How would you respond to that when they say, I don't want to be a narcissist. I don't want to do that.
We don't even need to worry about that. That's just being very black and white about things. That's a little bit ridiculous. I hear you. And that part of you that thinks that is being a little bit ridiculous right now. So I beat myself up for years because I'm like, why? I can love everybody else so well. Like, people are loved so well by me. I'm so good at taking care of them and anticipating what they need, right? I am training throughout childhood. Why can't I love myself? So I wrote a piece in the book talking about how when I met my husband, it was really the first time I'd ever been loved without conditions. Right? My mother has unhealed trauma that presents as some personality disorders, and it was hard for her. I know that she loved me, but she was
honey, and that's hard for you, my gosh.
Yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with an axis 2 cluster B.
Right. So like my level of debilitation is there. But when I met Matt, it was also right about the time I started therapy. And I think between my therapist being so, you know, the unconditional positive regard in therapy, where like I don't have to earn their warmth.
That's
I don't
right.
have to worry about losing their warmth. It's there. It made me realize that I felt like a rescue dog that didn't realize it needed to be rescued.
Yes.
I knew I felt this like weird thing with rescue dogs.
Right.
But I think I realized like, oh my gosh, I've been emotionally starved all this time. I've never felt safe in my life, like relationally. Yes. I have never been cared for well in my life. I'm a rescue dog.
Oh,
and it was so shocking to be like, oh my gosh, wait, you're going to get mad at me, but not ice me out?
Yes. Exactly.
What do you mean? That's an option. And so I think the thing that has hit me so hard with kind of going through that and then obviously walking with so many clients is that in order to believe you are worthy of being loved, you have to first be loved, right?
Yeah.
And like there are parts of me that I was conditioned to believe, made to believe were not lovable, were hard to love, or not even worthy of love.
Sure.
And my therapist and my husband, as I was healing, just as those parts spilled out or emerged, just kept loving me. And I'm like, wait a second, this part is lovable. And like, you really can't until someone loves you first. That really should be the parent, right? But our parents didn't know how to do that. They didn't know how to love all the parts of it.
Yeah.
They knew how to love the impressive, high achieving, successful, fine, good parts of us, but nobody had ever loved them, all of them. So
no,
how could they love, right? And so therapy and Matt, I really think the reason, if you're someone out there thinking, I love people so well, why can't I love myself? It's because those parts of you have never felt loved.
Yes, exactly.
Like sometimes it's a therapist, sometimes it's a friend. My book, I hope, like let my, be in a relationship with my book, whatever you need to do, like take my words, take them. Like,
that's right.
All
that's
of you is lovable.
Oh, it's so lovely. And, you know, we're, you know, overcompensating for that love, like you said, that we don't have within us. So we're pouring it out to others to make sure that they feel okay with us because we want them to like us. But not only that, we just want to be that good girl who's giving and giving and.
Totally. And I think, did you ever feel, I feel like some of my compulsive caretaking, that's a clinical way of saying like obsessively managing everybody else, making sure they're okay. I think there was a part of me that like never wanted them to feel the way I felt, even before I could put words to that. I'm like, I don't want anyone to ever feel like they don't matter in my presence. Like if they're here, they're going to feel like they matter. And it was really a reflection of like me not feeling like I mattered, but I like, we reflect out what's going on.
Right.
And it was really an inside job.
I remember growing up. When I was in a teenager, whatever. My friends called me Lucy from Peanuts, you know, because she had the little sign that said, you know, therapy 5 cents and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the outcomes of being a good kid is also I was the therapist of the neighborhood. I'd have these guys talk to each other. Now you guys are fighting, stop it. You know, and I'd have this, and then I'd have, you know, mom and sister or whatever, say, you guys, okay, mom, how do you feel about that? You know, and it was like, damn, mm-hmm. I was like, pardon me, but probably 8 years old, 7 years old, going, okay, come on, guys, let's just work this out. Because it was uncomfortable for me.
Yep.
Which is weird.
So many of us that just naturally went right into the field. We're like, just okay, I'm good at this. I've done this my entire life. So may as well.
This is my purpose. It's like, okay.
You're doing a lot of good. We just got to make sure we're healing ourselves along the way.
Exactly. So we're talking about you folks, bottling your emotions, hypervigilance to, you know, body language and facial expressions and how the tone of voice from someone's sounded, and chronic overachievements. Let's talk about that one. We're overachieving because we want to be perfect and we want our friends to go, you're so good.
I think we're trying to outrun anybody finding out. And for everybody, it's different, right? That like some of us have a name, a voice that's our deepest shame. My mother used to call me poor little pitiful Pearl when I was having a hard moment. Yeah.
Oh, no.
I write about this in the book. Like, so now when there is this part of me that's got me in a death grip sometimes, because they're like, oh my God, you're being pitiful. Stop, stop, stop. It's not safe. Stop. Right? Like, do something about it. Like, don't, you can't be vulnerable. People will think you're pitiful. And like, pitiful is like my deepest, darkest shame.
Sure.
Right? They're like, I can't let anybody see the pitiful side of me. Right? And a lot of work has been around, like, I was called pitiful for being needy. Objectively speaking, does that make sense? No. Right? And like, as a mother, I can love my children now that I've healed this. Yes. When they're needy, are they pitiful? Right. No. And like, you've got to kind of the reparenting work. Like, you've got to go back Right. But I think your question was, I'm trying to remember your question.
I guess I was just kind of talking about how we, you know, well, I was just the therapist to everybody else.
Oh,
and then segued into being therapists ourselves. And
The overachieving.
Overachieving.
Overachieving. So I think we've got this part that's like, we can't let anybody find out. And is it find out about that one time you made this big mistake or you, right? Is it something specific or is it just vague that like, you're actually lazy, you're actually stupid, you're actually whatever the thing is, nobody can ever find out. And so I think the overachieving is like, well, if I show them how good I am, right, that I really care about people and I care about them so much, then they will see that I'm good and they will never question that I'm not good.
Right.
And I think a lot of us carry a pretty like strong core belief that the most lovable version of ourselves has to be impressive.
Exactly.
No, impressive it's really in our achievements, impressive in how little support we need, how supportive we are of everyone else, and then how little support I don't even need support, right? And impressive in like, it's almost like anybody else could not handle all of this, but look at me and I'm not even breaking a sweat.
That's right.
Right. Like this, exactly. If I'm not impressive, there's something wrong with me and people, what will they think? They will think that I, whatever, and what will happen. Right.
Right. Right. And it's so true. And do you find that with the good kids as well, you know, as an adult into adulthood, when people are like wonderful and loving and kind to us and we're like, whoa. And they say, you know, things like, you're so lovely. You're really great. No, you're so giving. Or you look so good today. You go, no, I'm not that. Is there like that? What is that about that? Mm-hmm. It's not fake.
Mm-hmm.
The humility is like, ooh, I don't want to hear it because why? I mean,
I mean, generally, like the parts of us that like run the show, right? This is internal family systems, parts work. The parts of us, the part that's worried about upsetting others, the part that struggles to accept a compliment, all these parts. Yeah. We know their parts when they show up really black and white, right? Yeah. The all or nothing black and white thinking. It's not your highest self talking. It's a part. Right. And parts, like the more trauma we've got, the more right, intense these parts are. So like that part is acting like if you accepted the comment, people would think you are what? Arrogant, narcissistic. Like it's like extreme in its beliefs. Right.
That's right?
I think it's that. And then I think it's also like a lot of times for us as good kids, we try to stay out of the way, like quiet and out of the way. right? And our parents sometimes depended on that. Like they had a high need sibling or who had behavioral or medical or mental health stuff, or the parent themselves has chronic illness or, you know, mental health stuff or, you know, addiction. And so the good kid tends to try to stay out of the way. And so when pressure's, when the attention's on the good kid, it's like, because they're in trouble, right?
Right.
And so I think our body is like, wait, attention's on us? That's not a good thing. Alert, alert.
Right, danger. Right. Well, no, exactly. So let's talk about reparenting ourselves. There's so many different ways and wonderful suggestions and tools that you offer, you know, in your amazing book. It's Good Kids, Why You Suffered in Silence and How to Break the Cycle. Check it out, guys. It's a really, MaggieNick.com, Amazon, everywhere. It's a really good book. You got to get it. I mean, it's, I don't think, you know, there's been a lot of psychodynamic based books, you know, looking back into this and trauma, and there's a lot of trauma therapy and amazing, but this really lays it out there and helps people, I think, go, wait, ooh, wow, that's me. I mean, those defining components of this is how I felt and how can I heal myself? How can I, you know, get through? And a lot of people get through and they're likable, you know,
imagine that.
Well, everybody likes me at work and I have great friends, and but inside you're still like, what did they think? Or you're hypervigilant about words. So how can we parent to do some really self-parenting and take better care of ourselves through some of the tools that you suggest?
Okay. So for starters, the inner child stuff sounds so woo-woo and so scary.
Well, I know, but it's really real.
It's not. We know that.
But it's a safe space here on the couch.
Right. A lot of people, though, are so intimidated. So I just want to start there. I feel like somebody had ever said that to me, it would have made it feel a lot less intimidating. So to me, reparenting is just about giving ourselves, today us, and any version of little us that feels relevant to this moment, the comfort, the care, the love without conditions that we, and the assurance that we matter, really, that we needed but didn't consistently get growing up. That's it. Like, it's just being there for ourselves in a way that we needed. It does make us confront these fears of having needs and why, where that came from. And, you know, the fear of making mistakes and the fear of falling apart. Like, we've got stuff there. That we've got some pain there around, like, you know, what we believe it means about us, and, you know, not being cared for in those moments does send very deep messages that we've internalized about, you know, our worth and our worth, you know, if whether or not we're even worthy of love and care. Right.
Right.
And so it's really just being brave enough to stay with ourselves and learn how, because I had to learn how to cry. I like literally had parts that were like, nope, lock it down. Right. And I had to really work with my body to be like, body, it's safe. We can let the tear. I would feel the tears like stinging my eyes. And I'm like, come on. And when I could sort of work with my, you know, the part inside that was hurting and my body together and, you know, come back into my body and like, body, let the pain, it's okay to cry. This is really important.
Right.
You know, we deserve to go back for the parts of us that weren't okay. Right.
Exactly.
That acted like they were fine, but we're not fine. Right?
Yes.
Exactly. And we deserve to confront these beliefs that we have that were hard to love, that these parts of us, that the part of me that I'm annoying or that I'm too much or that, whatever, like the needy thing was so hard. My God, I so badly wanted to be the mom that could just be like, come here, honey. And that's not how it went. Like rage from out of left field came slamming into the equation. And I would blackout almost and come back to, and my daughter is like hunched over because I've said vicious words. Like, it was crazy. But like, the parts of me that feel hardest to love are going to be the parts in our children that we have the hardest time loving.
Yes. Right? Oh my God.
So when she's needy, it's activating like my worst fear about like, oh my gosh. And it's almost like when I would say, you know, shut her down or like dismiss her or whatever. It happened more than once. I never like hurt her with my body, but like, I know my words were vicious.
Oh, right. Sure.
And I literally blacked out. But I, it's about like recognizing that in that moment, there's a part of me that's like, no, it's not safe to act that way. Stop. Right. And it's coming from this part of me that's trying to protect my daughter from the thing that happened to me.
For sure.
Like that was my mom. That's not me. Like this is, but that's this is how, I think that's how this happened with her, that she had parts that were like, no, don't.
Yes.
Right. And she just didn't have the tools to break this cycle. So I had to go back for little Maggie, who was made to feel, you know, terrible about herself and pitiful for being needy. And I had to hold that little girl in my mind and be like, girl, there's nothing wrong with you. I'm here. I love you. Like it's okay to not be okay. And once I did that work and it took time, then I can tolerate better my daughter being needy, right? Like the way when we get triggered out of nowhere and you're like, where did that come from? Some shame you're carrying. If we're just like jumping to the end, it's usually shame at the deepest level. There's shame there. Just got activated and your body's trying to protect your child from feeling ashamed. But unfortunately we do the very thing that we don't want done. Like it, the math does the math, but it's coming from a loving place.
It sure is, honey. And I love that. Also, you know, it's part of, like you mentioned too, is understanding. I mean, and I get it. I've already, we all, you know, analyze why were our parents like that? I understand their backstories, their upbringings. They had some issues. They had some trauma. They had, so if we understand them, we can, you know, give them some grace. But I think forgiveness for ourselves, for being hard on ourselves and for, you know, being that person that's like people pleasing all the time and be, you know, we have to just love ourselves and forgive ourselves for being that. And not that you're going to turn into this raging crazy person going, what did you mean? Because that's not you. That's not the folks that are the good kids. That's not their soul. But it's just being self-aware. And like you talk about in your book, Good Kids, Why You Suffered in Silence and How to Break the Cycle. It's just observing some of those triggers, observing yourself, loving that which you are. Reparent that soul. I always have those flashbulb moments and recreate the movie. Of like my mom saying it to me in a really different way when I, when I did something that probably wasn't really naughty, but you know, and just sort of rephrasing it and seeing it happen here so it doesn't stick. Or self-talk's great too. Yeah.
I tell you, like nobody teaches us about unconscious work. You know, I didn't get a lick of unconscious information about unconscious trauma healing in grad school. And, but it is fascinating and like, honestly, like limitless, the kind of healing we can do in our imagination, because our, you know, this, our brain and nervous system don't know the difference between thoughts and reality. So when we imagine our parent tenderly holding us in that moment of struggle, our body and nervous system experience it as if it's actually happening. Like we can literally experience that as if, and sometimes we're repairing an old memory and kind of trying to rewrite it as much as possible. You can't fully wipe it. That's a good thing for survival, but like we can do what we can. And it's really, it's extremely powerful. That's, I mean, parts, internal family systems theory, parts work and EMDR together are such a powerful combination for that. To really allow you, but there's so much you can even just do without, you know, like let's follow, like let's get the book, let's make sure we're following along. But there are, Dr. Schwartz, the founder of IFS, has some books that walk you through some exercises you can do at home. It doesn't even happen. Like just love, like imagining for a moment what would have felt like to get that, you know, tenderness and get that apology or get that whatever. It really does have a profound impact, way more than I was ever taught in school.
Right. It's overlaying those old neural patterns of shame, the big E that you talk about as well. But anyway, I guess it's about that time already. We're going to have to wrap, but thank you so much for being here, Maggie. It's been awesome.
Thank you so much for having me. You're lovely. And I appreciate all of your wonderful questions today and your time.
Thank you. And how can folks get in touch with you and find out more about you?
So I have a Good Girl Rehab membership. You can come on, join us over at Camp Lovable. We have a good time. You can find me at MaggieNick.com. And then on the social medias, I am at Maggie with Perspectacles.
Perfect. All right. Maggie, check out her book, guys. It's really good. Good Kids, Why You Suffered in Silence, and How to Break the Cycle. Have a great day. And thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, guys, as I always say, take care of yourself first, and then you'll be good for others. And that's kind of in keeping with what Maggie was talking about as well. Have a great day. See you next week.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.